It's great to see so many people here. When we were getting all those dire predictions of the storm, we were wondering whether we would be able to have the Zazen Chi at all. And here we are. I think, I don't know if you were like me, you were having memories of Sandy. And so I think the traumatic learning that we had during that last storm might have influenced the way we looked upon this really quite ordinary storm. So even though the storm was ordinary, the atmosphere in the city yesterday with the supermarkets just people just lining up outside the doors of supermarkets to get their supplies, and the city did not feel ordinary. And so we all tend to fight the last war, and we have our mental map, things that we think we know. And then we find that reality has something quite different in store for us. So we've been following for the past few months the career of the sixth ancestor, Hui Neng. And this business of not thinking we know, of not giving in to our tendency to draw a map of reality and cling on to it for dear life, to not give in to that tendency, that's a very integral part of the story of Hui Neng, from my point of view. So I think many of us, maybe all of us in this room, are familiar with the story by now that Hui Neng was a poor woodcutter, the very lowest levels of Chinese society, made his living by chopping down trees, bringing the logs into town and selling them door to door. Was kind of a delivery boy in a way. Instead of delivering Chinese food or groceries, he was delivering firewood. And you know, it's quite amazing in some ways how little things have changed. So he was taking his wood from door to door and no doubt chatting to the customers, getting paid, maybe writing them receipts. He was going about business that even today we can recognize as being quite ordinary business. And just after he'd finished one of his deliveries, just by chance, he overheard someone chanting a line from the Diamond Sutra. And that line struck him. He saw something. He had some kind of insight. And the line that he heard was this line: no mind, no abode, and here works the mind. No mind, no abode, and here works the mind. Now, this was an occasion of great insight for Hue Nung. You know, for most of us, it's kind of bad news. No mind, no abode. Well, what's that about? That wasn't what I wanted when I started training in Zen. What I wanted was some teaching, or more accurately, really, in my case, some really cool, zapped out mental state where all the suffering and inconvenience and irritation of human life would just roll off my back. So I was very much out to get something, very much. And I think most of us enter into spiritual practice with that in mind. We're going to get something, and, you know, then we're going to have it made. And this line from the Diamond Sutra says, no mind, no abode. Any place you try to make your comfortable bed and say, ah, here it is, this is it. Turns out not to be it, not for long anyway. It's significant that the Diamond Sutra was the sutra that provoked Hue Nung's enlightenment experience. Because one of the things that was going on during the period that the Platform Sutra about the life of Hue Nung was written was the Prajnaparamita teachings, of which the Diamond Sutra is one, the Heart Sutra that we chant every day is another, the Vimalakirti Sutra. These teachings were moving to the heart of Zen orthodoxy. So the fact that it was one of these Prajnaparamita teachings that brought the sixth ancestor his flash of insight is significant from that historical point of view. And in the Diamond Sutra, fleshing out that original line that the sixth ancestor heard, the Buddha says to his disciple Sabuti, Sabuti, all bodhisattvas, lesser and great, should develop a pure, lucid mind, not depending upon sound, flavor, touch, odor, or any quality. Now, it's quite easy to take that line the wrong way. It's quite easy to think that what the Buddha is saying here is you shouldn't be experiencing any sights or sounds, that your mind should be a peaceful blank, a piece of paper. But what he says is, do not depend upon sound, flavor, touch, odor, or any quality. Do not attach to them. It's that it's our tendency to want to attach to this constantly changing flux that is our experience, that is the arising of suffering and craving. And then he goes on to say, and this is kind of the money quote, A bodhisattva should develop a mind that alights upon nothing whatsoever. And so should he establish it. A mind that alights upon nothing whatsoever. Well, what kind of mind might that be? Well, actually, it's the mind that each of us has. Each of us has the mind that alights upon nothing whatsoever, that is attached to nothing whatsoever. Our problem is we don't realize that mind, that we don't realize that without any adjustment at all, without attaining everything, anything, our mind, just as it is the mind that alights upon nothing whatsoever. And so this was the kind of type of teaching that caused the sixth ancestor, we're told, to have his great insight. And then you can see that this teaching that started him off on his Dharma journey continues as a theme throughout the saga of the sixth ancestor. So, for instance, he goes to study at the monastery of the fifth ancestor, Master Hungrun. And it was quite a refined place, this monastery. At this time in the north of China, Hui Nung was from the south, it was generally the aristocratic class that went to study at the monastery. So things at this monastery of Hungrun were just so and quite refined. And you can just imagine this delivery boy from the south coming in, seeking the Dharma, and he asks for an interview with the master. He's shown in, Hungrun, very intimidating, says, "Where are you from?" He says, "Well, from the south." "Why are you here?" "I've come to realize my Buddha nature." "Southern monkeys have no Buddha nature. What can you hope to accomplish here?" "Well, it's true that people from the north and the south are very different, Master. But within Buddha nature, how can there be any question of north and south? No abode. Alighting nowhere, dwelling nowhere, not to be found in the north. Not to be found in the south." And I think most of us know about what happened in the monastery, about the poetry contest, and where eventually Hui Nung was given the Dharma transmission and was given Bodhidharma's robe and bowl as significance of the succession. I think it's really important to take a look at what caused so much commotion in this monastery. Was it that Hui Neng was given the Dharma transmission. Well, his, you know, the head monk was also given the Dharma transmission. But it was Hui Neng who received the robe and the bowl and was told by his teacher to carry it off because and run away because the other monks would be so jealous. So what were they jealous of? I'm not so sure they were jealous of the sixth ancestor's understanding. They were jealous because he had the robe. He had the ball. So there was this tendency that we all have, again, to think that there's something to get. A robe, a ball, a certain type of mind. And if we just get that, then we've received the fruits of our practice. And so, as instructed, the sixth ancestor ran off into the wilderness, and the outraged monks of this monastery chased after him. They were gonna capture the flag, get that robe and bowl back. And the hardiest of these was apparently a big, strong fellow named Mio, who in his former career had been a general in the emperor's army. And he ran over hill and he ran over dale. And finally, we're told he caught up with the sixth ancestor on Mount Diorai. And he kind of cornered Hui Neng. And so Hui Neng turned around and said, "What have you come for?" "I've come for the robe and the bowl." And, well, the robe and the bowl, they simply symbolize faith, trust. They're not to be fought over. If you want them, you may take them back with you. And so Mio, this is what he wanted to hear, and he lunged for the robe and the bowl which the sixth ancestor had placed down upon a rock, and he couldn't lift them. Strong as he was, he could not pick up the robe, he could not pick up the bowl. This part of the story reminds me of that koan, "Why cannot a man of great strength lift his leg?" So, how can you lift something up when the very hands that you're reaching with are the very thing you're trying to get? Anyway, I think Mio wasn't used to not being able to lift things up because he was struck with awe and he broke out in a cold sweat, shivering from head to toe. And all of a sudden his mind was changed like that, and he said, "No, I didn't come for the robe and the bowl. I've come for the teachings. Please, please teach me lay brother. One could almost say that the story could stop there. You know, it's said in the commentary on this dialogue between the two of them that Hui Neng peeled a lychee nut and popped it into Mio's mouth. So right there, please, please teach me. It was already complete, but out of compassion, the sixth ancestor said, for some reason I see him putting his hands on the shoulders of this old general who's trembling now like a little boy, saying, and he said, thinking neither good nor evil, what right now is the original face of Monk Mio? And boom, he swallowed that lychee nut and he saw it. Think neither good nor evil. Think neither right nor wrong. Think neither delusion or enlightenment. Think neither calm, peaceful mind or busy, frightened mind. At this moment, what is your original face? In his commentary on this dialogue, Shibayama Roshi says, when all the dualistic oppositions, such as good and evil, right and wrong, love and hatred, gain and loss, are completely transcended, and when one lives in the realm of the absolute, where even the thought of consciousness does not work, where is Wei Neng? Where is Monk Mio? What there is the reality of body and mind dropped away. Body and mind dropped away. The original face. Many of you recognize the phrase body and mind dropped away as a teaching of Master Dogen's. It appears in his great essay, Genjo Koan, where he says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. When enlightened by the 10,000 things, the body and mind of self and others drops away. No trace of enlightenment remains. And this traceless enlightenment continues endlessly. Body and mind dropped away. The original face. Monk Mio saw it. And with tears of gratitude, he said to the sixth ancestor, previously I had followed the other monks in training, but now I am like someone who has drunk the water and knows for himself whether it's hot or cold. Previously, I followed the other monks in training. Previously, I tried to do what I thought was the right thing, tried to do the things that would get me into the right mental state. You know, I see this all the time in the Daisan room. People who are normally quite articulate get themselves all, their tongue all tied up in knots because they're afraid that what they say might not sound like they have real understanding. So they use a lot of circumlocutions and tortuous phrases because they're aiming at a target that they think is far off, not knowing that they themselves are the bullseye. When the original face is clearly seen, when body and mind drop away, just as you are, body and mind is the complete expression of the Buddha nature. Or as they say in the teachings, naked and free. Nothing to attain, nothing that you have to be, nothing that you have to believe, no mind, no abode, and here works the mind. Or in a verse, as Master Mumon advises us, do not draw another man's bow. Do not ride another man's horse. Do not defend another man's fault. Do not inquire into another man's affairs. Over and over again, we're told, drink the water for yourself. Your own experience just as it is, your own body and mind just as they are the living truth of the Buddha Dharma. And over again, we look for some comfortable place out there where we can make our nest. Well, maybe it's mindfulness. If I'm more mindful, that'll fix me up. Or, golly, if I could just be in the moment, that would do the trick. It's sad what we put ourselves through, and yet there seems to be no way to avoid it. It's just... is so human to believe the truth is somewhere out there, something that we're going to get when we're good enough, when we're smart enough, when we're fast enough, when we wear the right robe. Master Mumon describes it like this. He says, you may describe it, but in vain. Picture it, but to no avail. You can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. Can we hear that? Stop all your groping and maneuvering. There is nowhere to hide the true self. When the world collapses, it is indestructible. So we have a nice long Zazen Kai today. We have ample opportunity to realize each moment of our time together as our original face, as the face of Shakyamuni Buddha, the face of Wei Nong, the face of Dogen Zenji. And we always have a choice. We can take the gold that's laid right in our hands and throw it aside in our attempts to grope after something else. Or as Dogen Zenji says, we can open our hands and allow ourselves to be filled by the painful magistry of the Buddha Dharma. That choice is ours to make in each moment. So consider well how you use this time, this precious time we have together on a cold, quiet day in the middle of the winter in New York City.